Chapter 23. Senatorum. Infernal Allies. Kinder Powers. Senatorum Imperialis, 9th of Quartus. The Senatorum Imperialis had the capacity to accommodate thousands, having been constructed for a vision of civilian rule that would allow voices from all parts of society to be heard. It would never come to pass. Rows and rows of empty seats stared down as blind witnesses to the small gathering on the dais at the very heart of the chamber. No meeting had taken place within for months, and the space had been given over to refugees. They had been removed for a while, and now waited patiently outside in the cold under legionary guard. But their possessions remained behind, heaped on benches made into beds where lords were meant to sit. The smell of cooking and chamber pots lingered. The last council of the Senatorum Imperialis was done before the invasion fleets arrived. Voluntarily, it had ceded control to the three primarchs, yet the High Twelve in particular still had great influence and many responsibilities. It had been the Khan's idea to call them back together, just this once, a show of unity between men and demigods. Upon the dais of the High Twelve, the ruling council of the Hegemony of Terror were gathered around their table of fossilized redwood. 12 men and women, Malkador as their chairman, the once rulers of an empire under siege. Dawn, the Khan, Sanguinius, and Constantine Valdor stood at the edge of the dais, slightly out of the light, allowing the council their moment of remembered authority.
"Thanks to the actions of Jagatai Khan, we have a better understanding of what the enemy intends," said Malkador.
He pointed to the holocaptures the Khan had made, which floated before the gathering over the table.
"Lord Dawn and the others thought it best we were informed, and for that we are thankful."
"What are the enemy's intentions? What is that?"
Jem Marison, High Lady of the Imperial Chancellery, asked.
"That is clearly a siege cannon,"
Zagreus Kane said irritably. He was still new to his role as Terran potentate, and had yet to master some of the gentler arts of diplomacy. The others found him abrupt, though preferable to Ambassador Vetherol, whose brash tactics in creating the new Adeptus Mechanicus had left her disliked.
"The type is quite distinctive. It is Shieldbane technology of the Order Reductor, a most holy and terrible knowledge. Kelbor Hal's traitors are working against the palace."
"And will penetrate the Aegis?"
asked Simeon Pentasian, the doer master of the Administratum. Though all on the council had renounced governance of the Imperium while the crisis lasted, he worked as they all did in his own sphere of influence, attempting to keep the failing city running while the enemy gathered outside.
"It has a better chance than a less specialized weapon," said Kane. "It is far from certain to do so. The Aegis is strong."
"There are 8 siege camps around the palace. I assume all of them contain similar weaponry?"
said Chancellor Ossian of the Imperial Estates. Malkador glanced at Dawn.
"That is the case," said Dawn quietly.
"I had my legion survey 5 of the sites," said the Khan.
His armour appeared grey outside the area of bright light shining on the table. He moved fluidly, worryingly reminiscent of a predator outside a campfire's glow. The members of the High Twelve present peered nervously at him.
"All of them have similar machinery under construction. I chose to overfly the camp facing the Helios Gate myself because of the tower collapse on that section early in the bombardment."
"It is reasonable to assume they will make a determined attempt to break the wall there," added Sanguinius. He appeared distant to the council, as if his mind strayed beyond mortal affairs. "They have concentrated their efforts on the Helios section of daylight, and to the north at the Potens section of the Dusk Wall." His wings shifted, wafting air over the council that carried sweet scents from a better place. Again they moved in their seats uncomfortably.
"Then why have they not fired their guns?" asked Marison.
"The cannon must be assembled, my lady,"
said Kelsey Demidov, speaker for the Chartist captains. She was gentle with Marison, who, though expert in her own field, lacked breadth of knowledge.
The weaponry of the Order Reductor is generally apocalyptic in scale, said Kane. He chose a deliberately mechanical voice for the meeting, but could not hide his irritation at explaining the obvious to Marison. It takes time to prepare.
I am aware, said Marison huffily. We're all aware of that.
Well, said Kane, there are other strategic considerations, of course.
We have nowhere to go, said Bolam Hardiker, Paternoval envoy. They do not need to rush.
That day he carried his own nuncio system. None of them had their usual servants in attendance.
Let them dither, said Pentation. Every moment they waste building their weapons is more time for Lord Gilliman to make his way to Terra and to our rescue. Is that not the case, Lord Dorne?
There is another reason why they are taking their time, said Malkador before Dorne could answer.
As Imperial Regent, Malkador was leader of the group. Though his title was more one of ceremony, while martial law was in place, he was the only man the Primarchs would still defer to.
These bombardments, this wasting of life, has to have a purpose. Do you think Horus Lupercal, conqueror of half the known galaxy, once most favoured of the Emperor's sons and appointed War Master by him, has lost his mind?
I had hoped so, said General Adrien,
the Lord Commander Militant of the Imperial Armies.
It would make him easier to beat.
His comment drew a ripple of gallows laughter from his fellows. Malkador didn't laugh.
Thus far we have not seen Horus's infernal allies upon the field. We are fortunate. The Emperor is powerful and holds back the wickedness of the warp. But every drop of blood spilled on Terra's soil weakens his grip on the energies of the Empyrean.
Demas,
said Nemo Zhimeng, choirmaster of the Adeptus Astra Telepathica.
He speaks of demons.
The lords and ladies looked at one another uneasily at his use of the word.
These beings exist,
Hardiker said, his nuncio set smoothly translating the clicks and whispers emanating from his mutant throat into Gothic.
We navigators know them of old. They serve the entities that name themselves as gods.
Well, don't look so surprised, said Pentation sharply to the others. We've all heard the reports. We've spoken to eyewitnesses. Do not let the name frighten you. They are extra-dimensional Xenos, nothing more.
The Primarchs did not correct him. Better that the High Lords thought that way.
They could come in here,
said Marison, glancing around the vast building.
Maybe. Eventually, said Malkador gravely. The Emperor's power is not infinite, and certainly long before the enemy is able to manifest his wicked allies within these walls, his protection will be weakened sufficiently that the barriers between the Materium and Immaterium will be broken through elsewhere on Terra. Then we will have to face demonic creatures fighting alongside traitor legionaries, besides all the misguided masses who follow the War Master.
I can't quite believe it.
In all this, you know, Sidat Yassin Thatcher, Kyrurgian General, said, magic, sorcery.
It was hard for him. He was a scientist to the core.
The dark side of the warp, said Malkador. You all understand, I am sure, that the full extent of the truth is still not to be shared beyond the higher echelons of government. We discuss these matters here among ourselves. They are not to be disseminated further.
They agreed, some more than others.
Why did he lie about this?
Said Ossian abruptly.
A lie of omission is not the same as outright untruth, argued General Adrien. The Emperor's omissions are not as awful as some say. The warp has changed, said Nemo Zhimeng.
Few shared the reach of his vision, and he was apt at seeing past the surface of things to grasp truths others did not.
Powers move in the deeps of the Empyrean that were quiet before. Awareness of them gives them strength. His instinct to shield the human race was the correct one. For the same reason, we should not spread this news. Knowledge of the false gods gives them strength. It makes them real. In a certain way of looking at it, until recently they did not exist except as whispers, nightmares, and half-myths.
We are not here to discuss the motivations of the Emperor, said Malkador firmly.
True, true, said Pentation. But still...
He gave a weak smile, wholly out of place on his miserable face.
Nightmares, witches, warp entities. All the old legends coming true.
Please, Lord Dorn, present your strategic analysis, said Malkador.
Dorn stepped forwards fully into the light. His golden battle plate flashed resplendently, dazzling the High Lords. Although the dais raised the table well above the debating floor, Dorn was of sufficient height that he could meet their eyes when standing on the ground, and when stood next to the table, as he was then, he dwarfed them. The brief illusion of the Council's authority was shattered. Any who witnessed the scene could not doubt who was the true power on Terra. This son of the Emperor, with his brilliant white hair and his golden panoply, was the embodiment of the Imperium. Dorn cast his eye over the High Lords. Most looked down, afraid. A couple met his gaze with difficulty.
There are further problems the Khan's reconnaissance has brought to light, Dorn said. You see these structures here?
Buildings, said Demidov. Fortresses.
Siege towers, said the Khan.
Murmurs of disbelief went around the 12.
They are immense, said Adrine. Is it possible? Will they even function?
He addressed this last question to Cain. Cain fell into a contemplative silence.
Yes, he said eventually. Nullification of mass by contragravity devices and structural binding with integrity fields would enable such large objects to be motivated without becoming unstable. They are tactically impractical and of limited use, but they could be built.
We have indications of other similar siege engines under construction in the other camps, but none so far advanced as these. It is clear to us that soon the enemy will make an attempt on the walls by the Helios Gate, said Dorn.
You are bombarding them, of course, said Zhimeng.
I will come to that. First, enemy landing zones, Dorn said, pausing after announcing the subject.
A projection of Terra came into being, huge and grey, over the table.
The enemy has made planetfall at over 300 separate locations around the globe.
The hololith displayed enemy concentrations as blotchy purple.
Most of this is speculation. There are no precise figures for enemy numbers. Terra's orbital network is either destroyed or in enemy hands. These figures are collated from information gathered from other hives, where possible. In most cases, it is impossible. Supposition is our only tool. Siege camps.
Again, Dorn paused.
8 siege camps ring the city, all established behind defense screens. Overhead voids, layered power shields, ion shielding. While their smaller constructs go about protected by atomantic sheaths. Using the camps as a base, the Dark Mechanicum has begun work on a line of contravelation to encircle the entire Eternity Wall. They are under constant bombardment from the palace, but this will only slow rather than stop them. The shielding prevents our direct targeting of their siege equipment until it is ready and moving against the walls. Enemy troop strength. We have downed thousands of their landing craft. Nevertheless, several million troops of varying quality are now encamped outside the walls. However, these forces are of little concern. Other landing zones, out of range of the palace guns, have been set up further back in the Himalayan Massif. These landing sites are by necessity far from us, but we can be sure that reinforcements are marching from them already. What intelligence we can gather shows higher quality troops moving from these sites on other Terran cities. Spaceports. Horus has secured a number of landing fields across Terra. Near the palace, Damocles spaceport is under constant attack. For now, it holds, but it will fall. As it lies outside the Aegis, most of the structures in the Damocles zone have been destroyed, including the Black Ministry. Our warriors have done what they can to compromise Damocles Port's usefulness, But even damaged, it will offer the War Master a safe landing zone for Titan Legios and other heavy formations close to our main defenses. Aerial theaters, he continued relentlessly. We have no control of the void. Our fighter forces dwindle with every sortie from the War Master's fleet. Aegis strength. The Aegis holds at close to 100% strength over the Central Districts and the Sanctum Imperialis. But on the periphery, we have less than 40% efficacy. This is falling daily. Before long, the outer walls will be open to attack from above. And when that occurs, they will be breached.
The shields will hold, said Kane.
Dorne looked at the Fabricator General. We face 5 Primarchs. One among them has uncovered and is exploiting weaknesses in the Aegis network. My guess would be Perturabo.
Or Kalbor Hal, said Kane.
Perturabo was made for tasks such as this, said Dorne, staring at the Fabricator General with certainty. The bombardment patterns bear his mark as surely as if he had fashioned them in steel and struck them with his die. The Aegis will fail under his attack. The walls will then begin to take bombardment damage. This will happen soon. Palace Outworks.
Dorne returned his gaze from Kane to the Hololith, dismissing the Fabricator General's quibbles.
The outworks are close to collapse. Greater than 1/2 of the conscripts and other formations committed to their defense are dead. I will shortly give the order to abandon the third line and fall back to the second.
The bastions still hold, said Adrien.
While they do, we can keep the enemy away from the palace defenses. I anticipate the next major attack will come soon in an effort to clear the outwork towers from the field, said Dorne. This may be accompanied by the first serious attempt on the Eternity Wall. If it does not come then, it will come soon after.
This is a ritual, said Constantine Valdor.
He was almost as commanding as the Primarchs, but being better known to the 12, they were not as afraid of him. While the Emperor's sons spoke, he kept his own counsel, and that was something Dorne encouraged. In earlier days, when the Primarchs waged the Emperor's war among the stars, Valdor's voice had great influence on the Senatorum. His silence spoke volumes on the Primarchs' authority now that they ruled in their father's stead. Valdor stepped next to Dorne to point at the Hololith.
8 camps at varying distance from the palace. Draw a line from each, and the lines intersect over the Sanctum Imperialis. These desperate attacks by low-quality troops against the outworks are not serious attempts. They are sacrifices.
Not long ago we might have overlooked the possibility, said Dorne. But the Captain General has it right. Though the War Master erodes our outer perimeters, the strategy is suboptimal.
He pointed at 2 siege camps, one directly north of the Sanctum, the other to the southwest.
For example, the walls here and here are weakened. Yet the enemy establishes his camps kilometers out from those points. It is unmistakably a ritual arrangement.
My lords, said Valdor, Horus is taking our choices from us. If we do not attack, we allow them to build their siege works unhindered. If we attack, we add to whatever blood magic they are planning.
But are they truly involved in ritual? How can we know?
Said Marison disbelievingly.
Not one of us here is a sorcerer.
I know it is hard to believe, said Malkador gently. But by these means, the traitors will bring their creatures against us. The forces we see now are only a fraction of what we will eventually face.
For the time being, there are other problems to occupy us, said Dorne. Until 3 days ago, we were at least being spared the attentions of the traitor legions. The Death Guard have put down all over the globe. Their preference for biological and chemical warfare remains as it always was, and the efficacy of these weapons appears accentuated by their recent change. I have notification of plague from every corner of Terra.
What has happened to them? What are these reports of mutants and other abominations in the ranks of the traitor legions?
Ossian inquired.
A number of the legions have given themselves over completely to the so-called gods of the Pantheon, said Dorne. The first we heard of these creatures were unstable members of the Word-Bearers. We now know these warriors were space marines whose bodies were inhabited by warp entities.
Them again,
said Pentation. He took a hefty gulp of wine. In the old days, he'd only ever drunk water.
This practice has spread to other legions, notably the Sons of Horus, said Dorne. Other malformities among the enemy ranks are caused by exposure to the warp, both intentional and incidental, and deliberate mutilation.
We've heard all this, but reports about the Death Guard are particularly disturbing, Ossian said. Lord Khan's images and picked capture from the wall show...
He peered at a data slate in front of him.
I don't know what they show. Diseased warriors? Fouled weapons? How can they fight?
The answer lies in the warp, said Dorne.
I saw them firsthand.
As did Sanguinius, said the Khan. They are diseased, as you say, but somehow this makes them more durable.
Have we any samples to investigate? Corpses? Remains? Asked Demidov. Perhaps Thatcher's Hospitalis might be of help.
The Khan shook his head.
Do not ask for such things to be brought into the city. My apothecaries wished to examine the dead. I was unwilling to take that risk. Any examples close to the walls I ordered burnt. They managed to infect me with something, he said,
and his disbelief was clear to all.
The Emperor made us proof against all disease. I have never been ill in my life until this week. We cannot risk sickness of that potency getting into the general populace.
Thatcher nodded. He was a precise and reserved man, his aging face pocked with blister scars. On initial impressions, he looked nervous, but the scope of his intellect was apparent too from his quick movements, and his large eyes held reservoirs of compassion.
That is for the best, Thatcher said. Even so, the palace has not been spared. Disease runs rampant through the outer districts already, thanks to Mortarion. It is getting worse.
Although on first examination the Death Guard attack on our outworks appears wasteful of men, their objective was to get close enough to the city to bypass the Aegis with their artillery, said Dorne. Short bombardments from near range, covered by their infantry engaging with our outwork forces, followed by immediate withdrawal. Their aim was to introduce disease vectors into the civilian population.
Of what sort?
Asked Ossian.
Diseased corpses, living tissue riddled with bacteria, infected human waste matter, viral agents in suspension that aerosolized on detonation of the munitions,
said General Adreen.
They were inventive.
They succeeded, said Thatcher. Our Medicaid facilities are already overrun. Thousands are sickening. People are dying, and I expect many more deaths soon. Most of these diseases, though severe, are treatable under normal circumstances. But our staff are overstretched, and we have insufficient medical stockpiles. Malnutrition is exacerbating the problem.
He looked to his fellows.
Our populace is weak. I have taken the step of quarantining the areas within the walls that have been affected. But in a place such as this, with so many crammed into so small a space... No quarantine can be watertight. I cannot guarantee the core districts will escape disease. For the moment, the enforcers and the militia raised to assist them are shooting quarantine breakers on sight. Unrest is increasing. The sickness will get through. The people are frightened. Martial law has increased the incidence of rioting,
said Har Rantal, Grand Provost Marshal of the Adeptus Arbites.
My men are stretched thin. Only an hour ago, there was a concerted effort to break out of the fiduciary subzone of Sector 12. 570 civilians dead, 20 enforcers killed or seriously injured, one arbitrator dead.
These events are occurring so frequently, they're in danger of becoming statistics.
Civil unrest and disease must both be brought under control, said Dorn, by any means. This picture we provide for you is a grim one. But we have gathered you together again because it is going to worsen. The enemy will begin attacking in earnest. Once that begins, Horus will attempt to break through the Eternity Wall until he is successful. We will hold it as long as we are able, but we shall be forced to fall back to the inner defenses.
Dorn gave them a grave look.
Listen to me, as I say again. This will happen. The civilians have to be moved before then, or they will perish.
What do you wish us to do?
Said Pentasian wearily.
If we bring them further in, they will carry their diseases to as yet clean districts. We've had this problem before. Do you remember our final council meeting?
He looked at the other lords, who nodded and muttered their agreement.
We struggled to screen them then. We cannot screen them now, said Pentasian. They once numbered in the thousands. Now there are millions of refugees within the outer city. We have nowhere left to put them. They can't all live in here.
He gestured around the hall.
Millions of people, Lord Dorn, said Ossian. Leaving aside the time it will take to vet them all, and the men we do not have to do it, we will then have further overcrowding. Every quarter of the city is full of refugees. There is not enough space. Tension will increase. It is bound to.
I trust to you to see it done, said Dorn. You have no choice. The other alternatives are to leave the civilians to their fate, or to actively cull them. I assume none of you wish to give either order.
The High Lords looked uncomfortably at one another.
Yes, well,
Pentasian said,
we shall see what transpires.
He cleared his throat and massaged the bridge of his nose, then poured himself some more wine.
That leaves the question of the rest of Terra.
With the bulk of the legions at the palace, the enemy is having an easier time of it elsewhere, said Sanguinius. Over the last 3 days, since the Death Guard began their landing, we have received reports of 4 major population centres falling to the War Master, including London, Neuseeland Hive, New York, and Brasilia. Millions are dying. The diseases outside the palace are already killing. They are far more virulent than the ones we see here.
The Emperor shields us from such witchcraft, said the Khan. I experienced the effect myself. As soon as I passed within the walls, the sickness left me, and the knife used to infect me disintegrated.
The Emperor protects,
Ossian said clearly, then hurriedly added as Lord Dorn gave him a sharp look.
So they say.
You will still not commit your forces to actions outside the walls,
said Pentasian.
We must stand firm, said Dorn.
Your firmness is commendable, but will ensure no terror is left,
said Ossian.
There will be no terror if there is no Emperor, said Dorn.
The Khan gave Dorn a sidelong glance. They disagreed on this matter.
Gilliman will come. If he is delayed, then we must guarantee the palace and the Emperor until he does, said Dorn. The legions cannot leave the palace without jeopardizing the Emperor. If the Emperor dies, we have lost. And so the legions do not leave.
My lords, said Adrien, let us not bicker. The Primarchs favor us to give us this news.
They do not have to. We have no authority over them. And the Praetorian is right. We cannot weaken the palace defenses, even if it costs billions of lives.
It will cost billions of lives, said Pentasian.
Then what are we to do? Said Ossian.
We fight. The Imperial army fights on,
said Adrien.
We have plentiful support from Lord Kane's armies. The enemy's strength is concentrated here, at the palace. While that remains the case, my armies shall do what they can elsewhere. It is appalling, I agree, but the legionaries and custodians are needed here. We must resist as best we can.
That is all any of us can do, said Dorn. Resist. We tell you these things that you might prepare and save as many of our people as you can. That is your role in this, while we wage war on behalf of the Emperor. See to the civilians. Free us from this task, and I swear on my honor it shall be enough. We will not allow the Imperium to fall. What were you thinking? Said Dorn to his brothers,
though primarily he addressed the Khan. The Khan kept his silence. The three Primarchs were in an unfinished side chamber off the Senatorum Imperialis. The building had been under construction for centuries, and still the outer chambers were yet to be completed. The one they occupied had bare rockcrete walls and was lit dimly by a single lumen globe. It was freezing and damp. Nevertheless, there were bedrolls and other signs of civilian occupation all around the walls.
Why were you on the same section of the wall? Dorn demanded.
Again the Khan said nothing, but stared at his brother with calm eyes.
Providence? Said Sanguinius.
You could both have been killed, said Dorn.
The Khan chose to speak then.
We all die eventually, brother. There is nothing more true than that. Even for us.
Dorn clenched his fists.
Why will you not obey my orders? Why will you not put the safety of our father above your own impulses? We are different, you and I, said the Khan. In the eyes of the actor, the action is justifiable. We know what the Dark Mechanicum are building. We would not if I remained here. Intelligence in war is the mightiest weapon. I had already accurately deduced what was there, said Dorn irritably. Then I have removed uncertainty from your calculations.
The Khan gave his brother a wide smile.
I thought you would appreciate that.
Dorn placed his fists upon a workbench. The bench was a crude thing, plasteel sheets bolted to scaffold pole legs. The surface was neatly arrayed with tools. He stared at them in silence. They were covered with the dust of neglect, and left perfect outlines where curious refugees had moved them.
No more risks, he said. Either of you. Can you imagine the blow to morale alone if one of you died? I am sorry, my brother, but I am going to disappoint you again, said the Khan.
Dorn turned round so quickly the tools rocked.
Do not take your legion away, said Dorn. I forbid it.
The Khan held his eye.
You heard the High Lords. The people of Terra are dying. You are sacrificing the population of this world, he said. It is pragmatism, I know. You present a cold face to the world, brother, but your heart does not match it. You know this is not right. If we cannot protect the men and women of mankind's cradle, how can we claim the best interests of humanity are at the center of what we do? You have known of my strategy since you returned to the throne world, brother, said Dorn.
The shocking white of his hair accentuated the paleness of his face. In the dimly lit room, it seemed age had finally got its talons into him.
Your objections are noted, but at this late stage, meaningless. You shackle me to the palace with too short a chain, said the Khan. We fought the great crusade to free humanity, not to sacrifice it.
Dorn nodded once, though not in agreement. He rested his hand on his sword hilt.
Jagatai, I understand. I feel your anguish that mortal men and women suffer to ensure our father survives. But war is a calculation, this one more than all the others. Life cannot be measured in absolute terms any longer. Every death must be set against one consequence alone, how much time it can buy us. Time is the currency of this battle. We must hoard seconds like misers. Lives we have in abundance. They can and must be spent freely, regrettable as that is.
Neither of the others spoke.
Do not be hasty, brother, said Dorn more gently. Horus continues his bombardment of the surface. He is still testing us, still probing the defenses of the world. He is saving his best troops. He knows we cannot spare our own legionaries anywhere but here.
and the creatures assailing the hives of Terra are scum, dregs, opportunists and fanatics. While here, our outwork forces arrayed against them are more than enough to keep them back. These attacks of the Death Guard are intended to draw us out. Their presence shows our strategy is working. Leave, and you shall be playing into Horus's hands.
The situation is fluid, said the Khan.
He spoke without rancor, but his objections were clear.
Horus will land all his legions soon. I prefer to act now, while I am still free to do so. If you do, you will provoke his attack, said Dorne. Making the enemy change his plans is strength. Force your enemy to react to you. A general who waits for the enemy to act is already defeated. I learned this as a child.
Your wars were different to mine, said Dorne.
Then perhaps you should listen to me, said the Khan. The Orgu are better served in swift battle. On the walls they are worth 10 men. If we ride, 20 or more. I will not stand by while billions die.
Jagatai, said Dorne in exasperation.
Brothers, said Sanguinius. Arguing over eventualities that have not yet come to pass serves nothing.
Every strategic sense I possess tells me that Horus will direct his forces to reave the planet to exploit our concern for humanity, said Dorne. He does this expressly to divide our efforts. When we are split and our warriors spread, that is when the War Master will fall on us and seize victory. We must stand united.
Then you do not disagree with me, said the Khan. The population is at risk.
I anticipated slaughter long ago, said Dorne. And I regret that this chain of events came to pass, but we cannot respond to whatever provocation Horus presents to us. We cannot let ourselves be lured out. We cannot follow his plan. We will make ourselves weak. Then all is lost.
Since when was saving mankind from the darkness a sign of weakness? Said the Khan.
Sanguinius, my brother and comrade, what do you see?
Lend me your foresight.
Sanguinius shut his eyes. Like that, he appeared drawn and tired, a funerary monument to himself. Dorne suppressed a shudder.
My sight is not so clear as father's, said Sanguinius.
The future is ever in flux. Only some events. He paused, finding the words hard to say.
Only some events are certain.
Do you see me? What will be the consequences of inaction?
I see fire and blood, and a world laid waste if you do not act.
If I act, said the Khan.
Sanguinius opened his eyes to look at him.
There is grave risk to you. A confrontation unlooked for. And if you survive, a flight from one danger into greater peril.
Who will I face?
I cannot divine.
Will I save lives?
Sanguinius nodded.
Many.
That is what I was made for, said the Khan.
I will ride out. We will save lives by holding the palace, said Dorne.
So long as the Emperor lives, Horus cannot be victorious.
You hold the palace, said the Khan,
turning his hard brown eyes back on Dorne.
I will not leave the ordinary citizenry of Terra defenseless.
Jagatai, I insist half my legion remains here at all times.
The Khan spoke across him.
This is my word, but I ride with the rest of the Ordu. I will say no more other than to swear that I will return when I am needed. I will be here when the time comes. Do not try to stop me. I will not be dictated to, not even by you. If the Emperor himself were to tell me I should not go, I would not listen.
The Khan left the room. Dorne let him go. Sanguinius rested a hand on his brother's shoulder.
Trust to fate, brother. There are kinder powers at work who favor us.
I do not believe in such things, said Dorne with a troubled sigh. But I shall ask them to watch over the Khan anyway.